We're going to be going now to Jari Osborne. Jari, are you on the phone?
I am, Darren.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We're going to be talking to you today. You are a writer, producer, and director, but we're going to be talking mostly about the documentary called The Beaver Whisperer, which is going to be playing on The Nature of Things. David Suzuki is both associated with that channel and, is, of course, with that program, and is also featured in your documentary as well. I'm thrilled that it actually worked out. It was completely unintentional that we ended up having you on this week's show, because it just sort of turned out to be a water-themed show, and I had actually even forgotten that it was World Water Day until Liz reminded me. And then we get to deal with not only something having very important about water, which fits exactly with our theme this week, but also our Canadian mascot slash icon, the beaver. So do you want to just give us a little quick introduction to exactly what it is that you were looking at here? And then I've actually got a couple clips that I'm going to play from the documentary as well. But if you want to just introduce the documentary before we go to the clips.
The documentary is called The Beaver Whisperers, and it is revolves around the premise that the beaver is potentially the unlikely eco-hero that could save the world's fresh water. So it's a bit of a, I mean, obviously it's a bit audacious, but as I was doing the film, I actually was really delighted and amazed at how much of that premise, the working premise, actually unfolded as I was capturing the material for the documentary. It's really quite amazing what these animals do, and much maligned creatures, I might add. Most people that I spoke to before I even embarked on the piece hate beavers. So, you know, they do nothing but chop down trees around cottages and flood roads and driveways, and basically they are disrespected, discredited, and much maligned. So as someone who has kind of a soft spot for telling stories about unlikely heroes, I had found yet another unlikely hero for our times.
Absolutely. I think that's a great introduction. Thanks, and we'll get back to all of that. We've got just a very short clip with a couple of different pieces from the documentary, and then we'll come right back to you.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Scientists now say there's much more to this unassuming rodent than we ever suspected.
Hi, bud.
They modify landscapes, they create landscapes, they bring water back to a world that needs water.
In fact, beavers might prove to be the most important animals on the planet.
It's like we are in the emergency room, and they are our chief surgeon.
We don't like to be outthought by a rodent. Either you love them and you never want a single beaver removed from the landscape, or you hate them and every one of them's vermin and you need to get rid of them.
We need the partnership with this little rodent to basically help us fix our mistakes. And to do that, we're going to have to do a little bit of sharing. We're going to have to make some human changes so that we can give them the things they need so that they can turn around and give us what we need, which is water.
All right, there. So I think one of the themes, I was able to watch a majority of the documentary. I didn't watch all of it, but I watched a good majority of it. And one of the themes, and I'm glad you kind of mentioned it there was as well, which was that when I thought of beavers, you know, you sort of think Canadian icon and you think building dams and stuff, but you really got an impression quite quickly, and I'm glad that you mentioned it in the introduction, Jari, that a lot of people really don't like them, and that kind of surprised me. So we'll get to why they're so awesome sort of, I guess, afterwards. But let's start with who did you meet that has such hatred for them, and why?
Well, and you know what? I don't want to I don't want to blame anyone. There have been a lot of to me, there are some frivolous reasons for people disliking beavers, and I've certainly found cottagers who were I thought had, in my opinion anyway, my humble opinion, my beaver-like humble opinion, had not done enough to try to accommodate living with beavers by, you know, doing fairly simple things like, you know, putting wire around their trees and things like that. But sort of more dramatically, I think I visited farmers in Saskatchewan where there is, it's one of the few places in Canada where there's still a bounty on beavers. You know, you bring in your beaver tail and we will pay you $30 to, in an attempt to pest control, to do pest control. That is the way they manage the fact that beavers make it sometimes impossible for farmers who are out there trying to grow crops, make a living, grow the food that we put on our tables, make it impossible for them to actually work the land, because they are avid dam builders, and they will build where they need to. They don't know that they're not supposed to build there, you know, and so they will flood these entire properties, making it impossible for farmers to actually get out there and grow their crops. So it's understandable on that level. They can be very unintentionally destructive. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Hancock, about where Will Smith plays this superhero bit degenerate, and so he goes in to save a cat from a tree or something, and he takes out, you know, an entire city block of buildings or cars. I mean, in a sense, you know, when beavers go out to do the good work of finding water, divining water, directing it to where they need it, recharging water tables and all of that, they can, you know, make it impossible for a tractor to get onto a property. For example, they can flood out roads. They can flood them out and flood them out and flood them out. It takes an enormous amount of energy, time, and money to sometimes try to keep ahead of, you know, beavers doing damage to infrastructures like roads and things like that. So it's understandable from that point of view. And on the other hand, they are going to become increasingly valuable, I think, to our environment and to our world.
We'll get to the idea of what an incredible benefit they show potential in just a second. But the thing I sort of that you are identifying there that I just wanted to kind of go back to for just a moment was the idea there of calling something even a pest is generally just like a some sort of living organism, be it plant or insect or mammal or whatever it is, some sort of living organism that basically doesn't obey our, you know, commands.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
Essentially that's the definition. So I mean, just even the idea that, you know, nobody really likes mosquitoes except for those four top mosquito researchers and stuff like, and you know, and that sort of thing. You know, most of us will agree that mosquitoes are a pest and that sort of thing. But when you're And you, maybe we're just sort of splitting hairs here that shouldn't really be split, because I mean, life is life. But you know, beavers we think of as our mascot, and the idea that, you know, they're being a pest because they're trying to do what beavers do, and they're just doing it in a spot that's inconvenient for us. I mean, I think just that, even that whole concept speaks volumes about people in general and about sort of the way that we interact with our environment in a very generalized sense.
Oh, I think it's really interesting that you use that word, too, that that people label them as an inconvenience. I mean, sort of on the scale of, you know, 1 to 10, whatever, you have people who are inconvenienced by these water-infatuated rodents. I mean, they are, after all, second largest rodent in the world. And people refer to them as an infestation when they show up on your dock, or they start nibbling away at, you know, Aunt Beatrice's favorite, you know, trees, and cut down the trees that you've been nurturing around your cottage. So yes, I mean, you're right. I mean, we sort of have gone in, I think, you know, and colonized their world, and we are unbelievably indignant when they, in their methodical, industrious way, kind of fight back. And they do it very, very effectively. They have, as one of my beaver whisperer scientists said, as a park ranger, she would watch teams go in and take out dams and take out beavers, and the very next day those dams could be, they would most likely be rebuilt by the beavers. And she's seen grown men cry, you know, as she would put it, after dynamiting those dams and taking those beavers out numerous times. So, you know, there has to be another answer. Is one of the questions that gets raised by a part of my film is, can we live with them? How can we live with them, and how can we benefit from living with them? They are like friends with benefits, if you ask me. You know, they increase biodiversity. They are like they help with soil erosion. If too much water is your problem, their dam building engineering skills could be part of your answer. If you're in a bone dry desert and have no water, beavers could be your answer. They are a Swiss Army knife of ecological tools, and yet we have a bounty on them.
So with that in mind, obviously there's a lot of hints in the trailer for the documentary, and they get into it very fully, and some of your beaver whisperer heroes, as you said, definitely would be able to speak to this specifically. But you mentioned things about some of the benefits, and one of the benefits that caught my attention was about dealing with climate change. But if you want to just kind of go through some of the things that had been discovered and that some of these beaver whisperers had told you about, not just mitigating the idea by finding a way to maybe relocate the beavers in a way that doesn't hurt them, but actually using them as the ingenious, evolutionarily perfected engineers that they are for benefit, outside of just simply removing the nuisance. How can we work together with them?
Well, one of the projects that I did follow in Washington in the Cascades, I follow a group of scientists who are actually working to use beavers to rebuild an entire degraded watershed that used to support salmon, but had become so, the water had become so warm, the temperature of the water had risen because the streams had become so shallow without the presence of beavers. Beavers had been pretty much extirpated in that area for many, many, many years. So they are trying to use, they're convinced that reintroducing beavers into that landscape is going to provide the cooler water that the beaver, that the salmon, that the salmon need in order to survive in those waters and to reproduce. And they have been very successful at restoring beavers to the landscape and scientifically putting the data, attaching the data to sort of anecdotes about, you know, where there are beaver, you'll find water, etc. They're actually measuring water levels. They've got, you know, thousands of temperature measuring devices throughout the entire watershed, and they are providing and gathering the data that is going to support the idea that the beavers are an incredibly important environmental tool for restoration in all kinds of ways. And they work for free. I mean, you know, and they work for free with restoration, wetland restoration running to, you know, billions of dollars. It just doesn't really make sense to not give this a really thoughtful consideration.
Mm-hmm. One of the statistics I was just going to say that I remember, or the visuals that was given that I remember in the documentary, was somebody saying if you gave a family of beavers or a colony of beavers a water body the size of Ontario, you'd end up with a wetlands the size of Canada, just as a way of visualizing
Their
ability to work with that.
That is actually the way I kind of tried to crystallize, I suppose, the scientific research. I'm sure I'm oversimplified, and I apologize to Dr. Glynis Hood, but her PhD research was looking at the effect that the presence of beavers have on the amount of open water present on a landscape, and she was lucky enough, or fortunate enough, and smart enough to have access to 54 years of maps, detailed maps, in Elk Island, of Elk Island Park. So she was able to look at all kinds of factors and enter them into her study, and she was completely surprised to find that more than anything, more than whether it was a year of drought or whether a year of record precipitation, that where there were beavers present, when there were beavers present in these areas, there was 9 to 10 times more water. Sometimes she said, in the year she was studying, it would have been the only water that was still available in times of severe drought where local ranchers could water their cattle. It's very extraordinary.
One of your other beaver whisperer heroes, as you had it on there, was Michael LeClaire. And one of the things that I thought really interesting about him was his, he talks about a lot about the intricate networks of labyrinths that that beavers actually make underneath the dirt. And a lot of the time we'll just see, you sort of see the mound of sticks, and it sort of looks like they've just sort of built a dam, in the sense that they're just sort of putting a wall there. But it's anything but, and Michael LeClaire was designing something. I didn't really understand how exactly he was going to go about doing it, but illustrate the network of mazes and tunnels that they create underneath that in the dirt and the mud, so that they can sort of survive winter and protect food and have a place to raise their families and stuff. Can you say anything about his project and about Michael in general?
Well, Michelle is just an incredible man, a former trapper who was hired by the Gatineau Area Park to come in. He's been working with beavers now. He's actually manager of the beaver population in the park now, and has been for some 30 years. But he came in as part of a team of trappers, and to manage the problem, beavers in the park who were taking out trees and flooding roads and infrastructure, making the park pretty much unmanageable. So he realized, though, that he could not stay ahead of it. They would trap, and which meant at the time, of course, you know, killing the beaver and taking their dams out. And he would come back to the same location a few days later, and the dam would be totally rebuilt. And he felt like he was in some, you know, cartoon or the seventh ring of hell or something that never ended. So he decided that there had to be another way, and he discovered what triggered these animals to build so conscientiously and so unstoppably was the sound of running water. And because they need water, water is survival to them. Water is everything to them. They use it to get to their food. They use it as protection, like protection as moats around their lodges, etc. And he decided that he would be, by mimicking their engineering, he would be able to design devices that they could help him build by building, sweetening an area where he would want them to build, and using their dam building expertise to build a retention dam, which would actually keep water away from roads that were being flooded, etc. So that's one of the things that he's done. The other thing that he's, and so he, in a sense, he recruits them as flood control engineers to manage this beautiful jewel of a park. And it's very impressive. He's just such a character. He's so wonderful. The other thing that he describes to me is that, you know, if you only see the surface of something, you don't know what the beavers are doing underneath the water. He's, of course, over the years, seen many different kinds of habitats. So a drained habitat where the dam is broken and it goes through the organic process again of becoming meadowland, basically. So that if you see a drained pond, it is very convoluted. It's like Drumheller or something. It's nothing for a beaver who wants to find water to dig like 20 feet down throughout a pond bottom to find water and to direct it back to where it needs it, which is right Wow. around its lodge. So you know, he is a great admirer of the beaver's dam building engineering ingenuity and skill, but he has found a way to harness that as well, that incredible drive to preserve water is something he's managed to direct. He kind of speaks the beaver language. He calls himself the plumber of the beaver dams, because he actually uses their dams to control water levels in the park.
Well, that's absolutely amazing. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank you very much for joining us, Jerry Osborne, today. If you want to just let people know before they go, if there's a way to contact you, if people are interested, and when they can check out your very, very well-done documentary, The Beaver Whisperers.
Oh, thank you. The documentary is going to air next Thursday, March 28th at 8 p.m. on CBC television. And we have also at cbc.ca, we have a Beaver Whisperers website, where you can actually watch what the beavers are doing. We have a live streaming beaver cam installed inside one of our Gatineau lodges. So, and you can tweet me there.
Awesome. So, and we'll have links to all that up on the website as well after the show in case you missed that. Again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks.